potential investors who are already nervous about a dead player from bailing and taking their money with them. Barber looked appalled. Medina, on the other hand, just looked annoyed. He got it. "Or," Medina asked finally, "or, for starters, you can tell us why you actually pulled that data." Medina looked at Barber and nodded. She sighed. "Deputy Commissioner Kaufman ordered it pulled," she said. I looked up the name. Alex Kaufman appeared in my vision, youngish. "Why?" Van asked. "Because he's stupid," Medina said, and then held up a hand to preempt Van's objection. "I know, but it's actually the truth. He saw the feed, realized Chapman was dying, and panicked. He ordered the technical director to pull the feed. She wasn't happy about it, but she didn't have any choice." "Who is the technical director?" I asked. "Giselle Hurwitz," Barber said. "Is she here?" "I think so. She may be back at the hotel by now." Van turned to Medina, "and she'll talk to us." "I'll let her talk to you, yes. And Chapman's data?" "What about it?" "We'll need it." "Why?" "Did you miss the entire conversation we just had about the potential for the data to have been compromised?" Van said. "We need our own people to look at it now," I said. "We have to be sure, and we need to see what happened after the feed was down." "I'm worried about it getting out," Barber said. Van smiled. "This is your privacy gambit again." Barber flared at this. "Look, it's not just a bullshit line. The last thing we want is Dwayne's family to find this data feed floating around with people speculating about it." "So you're not going to put it back up?" I asked. Barber opened her mouth, but Medina quickly put his hand on her shoulder to silence her. "We'll be returning the game portion of Dwayne's feed to the overall data set very soon. We can't certify the game stats until they are in there. The rest of it, I feel comfortable keeping out of the public eye for now." "We need all the data," Van repeated. "Giselle will have it," Medina said. "She'll give it to you. You can verify it if you want. And Agent Van?"
"Yes?"
"Later, if I see it out there in the world, I'll come find you." Chapter 3. The lobby of the Hilton looked like a press conference had exploded inside of it. The lobby itself was filled with reporters and other various grades of journalists looking for someone, anyone, to get a quote from, while outside the lobby, television and streaming journalists and their crews jostled each other for space to do their one-shots. "This seems excessive," Van said to me as we got out of the taxi we took to the hotel. "It's the league's first player death at the last preseason game," I said. "And the league was actively courting new money. It's national news." Van grunted at this, and we went into the lobby through the revolving door. As we came out of the door, a couple dozen sets of eyes looked at us, and a second later, through their glasses, identified both Van and myself as FBI agents, and me as, well, me. "Oh, here we go," Van said. And then we were surrounded by press yelling questions at us. "Why is the FBI investigating the death of Dwayne Chapman?" shouted one journalist as we trudged toward the elevator bank. "No comment," Van said. "Is there a reason to believe there was foul play in Chapman's death?" shouted another. "No comment." Van jammed the elevator call button. "Agent Shane, your father may be investing in the league. Is it appropriate for you to be part of the FBI investigation?" "No comment," I said. "Chris, are you dating anyone?" "What?" I said. "Really? You're still famous." "Jesus, no comment," I said. Van grabbed me into the elevator and glared at the reporters to keep them from blocking the doors. "You're still famous," Van said to me mockingly after the doors closed. "I'm really not," I protested. "I don't think it's something you get to vote on." "I'll pass anyway." "You used to do that every day?" "I had my share of press gaggles when I was growing up," I said. "But not for something like this." Van nodded. "A fire hose would solve the problem." "In the short run," I agreed. "In the long run, it would just make more trouble. Reporters don't forgive being fire hosed." We exited the elevator. Giselle Hurwitz was a Hayden, and her room at the Hilton was a charging closet with an inductive floor mat. We met in a conference room the league had reserved for meetings. "Thank you for meeting me here," she said, after we had made our introductions and sat. "I didn't want to bother with the lobby." Completely understandable, I said. Did Medina explain why we're here? Van asked Hurwitz. She nodded. You want Dwayne's data feed? We also want to ask you about why it was pulled. Oh, that, Hurwitz said. Her threep was one that had facial movement in it. She pulled a frown. That was all Commissioner Kaufman. I warned him against it. What did he do? He freaked out. Me and Taylor, my assistant director, were monitoring the player feeds in the broadcast booth when he came in and told me to pull Chapman's feed out of the data stream. He slammed open the door, and the first words out of his mouth were, pull Chapman's feed, pull the whole thing. You saw that Chapman's vitals were all over the place by then? I asked. Sure, but we've had that happen before, Hurwitz said. I mean, we haven't had anyone die before, but we've had players affected during games. Last season, we had Clemente Salcido have a seizure during a game. He was with Mexico City. His threep just dropped and shook, and his brain activity was spiking all over the place. And no one told you to cut the feed then. We were told to highlight it, Hurwitz said. We can take any individual player data and pin it so everyone who has Hayden View sees it. The broadcast director had us pin it and then feed it to our broadcast affiliates. He said it was great drama. He was kind of an asshole. What happened to the player? Van asked. Salcido was benched for the rest of the season and then dropped. The league's insurance carrier didn't want to cover him for play. They were worried his next seizure would kill him. Did what was happening to Chapman look like what happened to Salcido? I asked. I don't remember, Hurwitz said, and spread her hands. Sorry, it was a while ago. And I'm a tech person anyway, not a doctor. Can you get us the feed for Salcido's event? Sure, but that's my point. I don't have to get you the feed for that. You can get it yourself. It's in the league's public data archive. We don't pull feeds. Not before tonight. So why now? Van asked. You'd have to ask Commissioner Kaufman. You didn't ask why? Of course I asked why. And he said, pull the fucking feed or you're fired. He's the boss. Or one of them anyway. I wasn't going to lose my job over it. Hurwitz nodded to me. You know why? I nodded back. A year ago, Congress passed the Abrams-Kettering bill, drastically cutting back government assistance and coverage for people with Haydens. It's not a cheap syndrome to have, even with government assistance. A year isn't a lot of time, but it's enough time for a lot of Haydens to notice the economic floor was suddenly tilting out from under them. Hurwitz's gig as a technical director for the NAHL probably paid well, and it wouldn't do for a league that relies on Hayden athletes to give its Hayden employees a rough ride on benefits. But these days, she and most other Haydens were working without a net. The rationale behind the Abrams-Kettering bill was that advances in technology and medicine meant Haydens were now playing on a more even field along with everyone else, and that the government could scale back the services it had provided them over the last couple of decades. It was a nice theory. Hurwitz's comments suggested, in practice, there were some issues. But what did I know? I was a government employee with excellent benefits and a ridiculous trust fund. You didn't worry that you'd get in trouble for pulling the feed? Van asked. No, Hurwitz said, then amended, well, a little? But there were six other people in the broadcast booth. They all heard Commissioner Kaufman order me to pull Chapman's feed. I figured it would be hard for him to pin it entirely on me if it became a problem. She paused. Is it a problem? I mean, I know it's a problem or you wouldn't be here, but I want to know if it's a problem. I don't want to lose my job. There's a problem, Van said. I don't think it's your problem. It might be Alex Kaufman's problem, though. Hurwitz seemed to relax at that. Well, he's staying here at the hotel, in case you wanted to ask him. Van smiled at Hurwitz. Did you just throw your boss under the bus, Ms. Hurwitz? There was the smallest of mechanical noises as Hurwitz's threep made a smile. He threatened to fire me today, Agent Van. I think it's okay to make him sweat a bit. Kaufman didn't answer his phone, but texted back to me a minute later. Apparently he was screening his calls. I've been expecting you, he texted. I'm literally just about to hop into the shower. Can you come up in 15 minutes? Room 2423. He'll meet us in 15 minutes, I said to Van. We were returning to the lobby. Good. I need a smoke. Have you thought about quitting? Van gave me a look. You should quit, you know, I said. I'm going to keep giving you this look.
Yeah, I know.
The elevator opened up and we exited the lobby so Van could have her cigarette. The journalists who accosted us earlier were occupied with a league executive. We escaped the lobby unscathed. Have you looked at the data yet? Van asked me as she puffed.
No, I said.
Hurwitz sent it to me directly, Threep to Threep. She pulled it straight out of the NAHL's data cloud, and I downloaded it directly to my Threep's local memory. I was going to contract Tony to look at it. He'd know whether it's been tampered with. Van nodded. In addition to being my flatmate, Tony Wilton was a high-end computer nerd who regularly contracted with the federal government. He was smart, easy to work with, and already in the vendor system. And when he got paid, some of the payment went toward the communal rent. So in a way, it was like getting cash back. But it's all there, Van said.
It's all here as far as I can tell, I agreed. And soon enough, we'll see what it has to say about Chapman dying.
It's going to show that Chapman had some sort of seizure, like that other guy.
Salcido, I prompted.
Right, Van puffed again. Haydens have a higher incidence of seizures because of what the syndrome does to the brain and because of the neural nets we stick in there. She looked at me.
Have you ever had one?
A seizure?
Yeah.
No.
How about you?
When Van was a teenager, she had contracted Haydens and suffered through both the early flu-like stage and then the much more painful second phase, which resembled meningitis. Unlike many whose progression went that far, she was not locked in, nor did she suffer significant mental damage or cognitive impairment. To all outward appearances, she came out of it just fine. Nevertheless, her brain was rearranged by the disease, and she had a neural net in her head, a souvenir from her days as an integrator, one of the fully ambulatory humans who could let a Haydn borrow their bodies to do things for which human bodies were desirable or required.
No, she said, and then held up her cigarette. But then again, I self-medicate.
So if the data shows he had a seizure, what then? I asked.
Then it's just bad luck for Dwayne Chapman.
There'll be an autopsy, too. That was covered in the press conference.
Right, which will likely confirm that it was a random seizure.
That doesn't explain why Kaufman freaked out like he did.
He's probably an idiot, like the lawyer said. Saw one of his players dying on the field? Remembered the league was wining and dining potential investors?
Including your dad. How did that go, incidentally?
Mom said that she and Dad went home. A league flunky was begging him not to leave yet. I think after this, they need his credibility more than they did before.
After this, your dad could probably ask to be made commissioner and they'd give him the job and a parade.
I don't think he'd want the job.
That's because your dad is smart.
So, we go visit Kaufman. He admits he overreacted and is an idiot, which is sad for him, but not actually a crime. And then we'll be done with our end of things.
Okay, I said.
Which means you will have dragged me out here on a Sunday for nothing.
Sorry. I was sleeping.
It was 4:30 in the afternoon when I called. I'm not going to feel too bad about that. I had a late night.
Mom says you might be having too many of those. Van smiled.
She's not my mom.
She dropped her cigarette and crushed it out.
Come on, let's go talk to Kaufman.
We'll be early.
I want to get back to sleeping. If Kaufman's not fully dressed, he doesn't have anything I haven't already seen elsewhere.
The door to room 2423 was unlocked. The bolt, which normally would have secured the door, stuck out, keeping the door from closing entirely. Behind the door was the sound of the shower, still running. I told you we were early, I said. Van ignored me and knocked on the door, calling Kaufman's name, and did both a second time when he didn't answer. He didn't answer the second time either. Van unholstered her sidearm and prepared to enter the room, then looked at me.
Where's your weapon?
It's at home, I said.
You're working.
I wasn't, I reminded her. Then I was. It wasn't convenient to go home. She reached down to her ankle and produced a small pistol. She handed it to me.
You actually have an ankle holster, I said to her after a moment of staring.
Yes.
Come on.
We entered the room cautiously.
There was no one in the main hotel room, which didn't entirely surprise me as the shower was running. The bed was rumpled and slept in. On the floor by the bed were various articles of clothing. A shirt, suit jacket, slacks, tie. A wallet and a pair of glasses were on the dresser by the TV. Something was missing from that collection. "Chris," Van said. I looked up, and she pointed into the bathroom. What had been missing was a belt, one end of which was knotted around the shower head, still running, the pipe of which had been pulled out of the wall. Just not enough to keep Alex Kaufman from being strangled on the other end of the belt. He was very clearly dead. Van went in and checked to be sure. "Well, shit," Van said, coming out of the bathroom. She holstered her weapon. I looked at her. "We're not still going with the it's just bad luck theory anymore, are we?" Van looked my threep up and down. "New threep?" "Yes." "How is it for recording and mapping?" "It's got all the bells and whistles. I've been recording since we entered the room." Van nodded. "Map it. Map the entire room, including in there." She pointed into the bathroom. "I want to get as much information as possible before Metro Police gets in here and starts fucking up the scene. And then I'm going to need you to do something else." "What's that?" "Go to Philadelphia." "Tonight?" "Yes," Van said. "We need to talk to Dwayne Chapman's wife before someone from the League convinces her not to talk to us." She motioned to Kaufman's body. "After this, the League's urge to shut everyone up is going to be very strong." Chapter 4. I got back home an hour later for my trip to Philly. A welcoming party was waiting for me in the foyer. "Tell everything," the twins said. Or one of them, anyway. Justin and Justine shared a threep, and you never quite knew which of them was operating their threep at the time, and after a while you stopped wondering and just thought of their threep as the twins. I was told there was a reason the twins shared their threep, and I had been promised early on it would be explained to me. But a year after moving into the house I shared with them and three other Haydens, the reason had yet to be revealed. Honestly, at this point, I sort of enjoyed speculating more than knowing the actual answer. "Chris can't tell anything," Tony yelled from the front room. "It's classified." "It's not classified," I yelled back. I returned my attention to the twins. "But I probably don't know anything more than you do about Dwayne Chapman right now." "There are rumors," the twins said, backing up to let me into the house. "That I don't doubt." I walked into the front room, where the threeps of Tony and Taylor Givens, two of my other flatmates, were shooting pool. Elsie Curtis, the final roommate and our most recent addition to the house, was on a work gig in Singapore and kept different hours from the rest of us. We rarely saw her around these days. Well, that's not true. We saw her every single day. Her body was in her room, along with her local threep. We checked in on her a few times a day, changed her various bags, and the one of us who was an actual doctor, that would be Taylor, would make sure there were no outstanding biological issues that needed to be addressed. Elsie checked on all of us, too, usually while the rest of us were asleep. That was the whole point of the house. Six Haydens living together and looking after each other's bodies. It was cheaper and friendlier than hiring in-home staff, especially now that Abrams Kettering had cut off medical subsidies to Haydens. These days, every bit helped. For the rest of my housemates, that is. My physical body still resided in my parents' house in Northern Virginia, along with two full-time caretakers. I had been planning to move my body to the communal house at some point, but I was confronted with the optics problem of having two personal caretakers while the rest of my flatmates had none, or dismissing my caretakers and then being responsible for two people I'd known and cared about for years losing their jobs. Jobs they wouldn't be able to easily replace because the Abrams-Kettering bill meant there was less money for Haydens for home care. It was easier to maintain the status quo. Cowardly, perhaps, but easier. Not that my flatmates minded all that much. One extra pair of eyes and hands paying attention to their bodies, one fewer body for them to take care of on a day-to-day basis, plus I paid for the biggest room in the house. Really, I was a model housemate. "We saw you on the news," Taylor said. She was lining up a shot on the pool table. You and your partner being mobbed while you were waiting for an elevator? And then the two of you finding that NAHL executive dead in his hotel room, Tony said. There are rumors, the twins repeated.
I'd rather not add to any of those, I said. People are saying you wouldn't be involved if there wasn't a murder.
That's not true, I told the twins. We're involved because Dwayne Chapman died under unusual circumstances.
So did the executive, Tony pointed out.
Murder is an unusual circumstance, the twins noted.
Not that unusual, Taylor said. She worked at a D.C. emergency room, so she had standing to opine.
There's nothing to say it's murder, I said, in either case. It's unusual, that's all. And Chapman's threep was in D.C. while his body was in Philadelphia. That's an interstate issue. When it's an interstate issue, we get called in.
And they didn't even have to call you in, Tony said. You were already there.
Damn it! Taylor had flubbed her shot. Tony was now lining up his.
At the very least, you've had a busy day today, she said.
It's going to get busier, I said. I have to go to Philly. I need to interview Dwayne Chapman's wife.
Jesus, Taylor said. That's no fun.
The rumors say they were estranged, the twins said.
Do the rumors say why? I asked.
The usual, infidelity, stupidity, groupies, stress because he's Hayden and she's not.
How are you getting to Philly? Tony asked. He sank his shot.
The FBI office there has a visitor's threep. I'll use that.
Also, Tony, I need to talk to you privately before I go.
I'm busy humiliating Taylor at the moment, Tony said,
and then shanked his shot.
His ball clicked against the eight ball, which had been in front of the left side pocket. The eight ball sank into the pocket.
Shit.
You were saying, Taylor said to Tony.
Chris cursed me, Tony said, and then looked over to me.
You totally cursed me.
Sorry.
I demand compensation.
Well, as it happens, the thing I wanted to talk to you about can probably take care of that.
The Philadelphia FBI's guest threep was a late model Sebring Warner Gallivant, which was mildly surprising to me. The Gallivant was a mid-priced, mid-spec'd model, and since the FBI's loaner threeps tended to be gotten through civil forfeiture, they were usually either barely functional basic models, gotten from street-level miscreants, or high-end luxury gigs, gotten from miscreants higher up. With the Gallivant, either some suburban Hayden had gotten tangled up in a questionable enterprise, or the Philly FBI office actually bought a guest threep, and this was what they could get past the bursar. The loaner threep was stored in a storage closet. When I accessed it, the first thing I noticed was that it was at 13% power. I looked down and saw that the threep had been displaced off its induction plate, shoved over by a pile of boxes.
Well, crap, I said out loud.
I shoved the boxes back and stood full on the plate to see if it was a high-speed charger and got nothing. I followed the power cord. It was unplugged. I cursed and plugged it in and got back on the plate. It informed me that a full charge would take 8 hours. The door to the equipment opened, and an older gentleman peered in.
Hello?
Do you know if there's a high-speed induction plate somewhere in this office? I asked.
A what now?
The man asked. I suppressed an urge to groan. Are you an agent here?
No,
Agent Shane.
No, Agent Shane. I'm custodial staff. Nearly everyone else is at home. It's Sunday evening. I didn't even know you were here. I just heard noises.
Sorry.
It's fine. I just thought the rats might have come back.
He held open the door to let me out. I exited the storage room into a hallway and called up a map of nearby fast charge induction plates open to the public. There weren't any. The FBI office was in a part of Philadelphia's downtown. The area had lots of federal buildings and museums, but not a lot of places open on a Sunday evening. Looked like I would be trying to coax a charge out of the bureau car that I'd reserved.
I don't have any notice of a reserved car for you, Agent Shane, the lobby security officer said to me when I went down to find out where the cars were.
I sent in the request at the same time I requested the threep, I said.
I'm sure you did, the security officer said. But unfortunately, that request never got to me, so I can't unlock one of the vehicles for you to use.
I posted up my FBI ID on the Gallivant's small chest monitor. You can check to see I am who I say I am. I mean, beyond the fact that the only way I can access this threep is to use the FBI's encrypted network.
I believe you, the security officer said, but I literally cannot unlock a car for you without an authorization code.
I sort of need a car, I said, not only to get where I'm supposed to go, but to charge this threep.
I can call you a cab. Maybe you can charge in there.
I resisted the urge to throw a fit, because the lobby security agent wasn't doing anything wrong.
Please, I said.
5 minutes later, the cab appeared at the front of the FBI's building. I went out of the lobby and tapped the passenger side window.
The cab wouldn't happen to have an induction plate in it, would it?
A what? The cab driver appeared confused.
Never mind. I gave him the address of Dwayne Chapman's townhouse.
As we drove along, I shut down every possible threep system I could to conserve energy. This was going to be a long night, but if I didn't watch my power usage, it would also be a paradoxically short one. The Chapman townhouse was thronged by reporters and journalists, and also by Hilketa fans wearing Boston Bays colors. Philadelphia itself didn't have a Hilketa team yet, although it, like Washington, D.C., was slated for an expansion team. Pittsburgh had the Pitbulls. The fact that Pittsburgh had a Hilketa team before Philly was a source of irritation to many Philadelphians. I put my FBI ID on my threep's chest screen and pushed my way through the mass, making my way up the steps. The door opened before I could knock, and a man in nursing scrubs peered out.
Agent Shane?
That's me. The man nodded.
Come inside, please.
I'm Alton Ortiz, the man said once we were inside. He'd held out his hand for me to shake, and I did. I was one of Dwayne's caretakers.
I know, I said. I'm very sorry for your loss.
Thank you. It's been a rough day.
I'm sure it has.
I know you're here to see Marla, but she's busy at the moment.
Is she talking to the Philadelphia police?
No, she did that earlier. This is a league representative.
I said.
The whole point of talking to her now was to do so before the league tried to hush her up. I made a mental note to contact the Philly police and see who was working the death on their end, to see if our stories matched up.
Is it a lawyer? I asked Ortiz.
I think so. I know he's here to talk about her survivor benefits. Ortiz motioned to a front sitting room.
If you like, you can sit here, and I'll let her know you're waiting.
Actually, I'd like to see Mr. Chapman's room, if that's all right.
Ortiz seemed to think about this for a moment, then nodded again.
All right, he said. The police have already been through it, though.
I'm sure they have. Don't worry, I'll be unobtrusive.
Dwayne Chapman's room was on the first floor of the townhouse, where a traditional dining room might be. This made a bit of sense, as the kitchen area could be used as both a storage and sitting area for caretakers. Along the wall were three threeps, one a standard luxury threep, one designed for heavy-duty recreational use, and a gaudy, vaguely ridiculous-looking thing that I recognized as a formal threep, something to wear to galas and events. Near the back of the room sat a now-empty creche, a model I didn't recognize.
It's Labrum, Ortiz said when I asked him about it. The company makes them specifically for the league. All the players have one.
That's a very specific endorsement deal, I said. Ortiz shook his head.
It's not that.
Labrum creches have special systems and monitors to transmit information and to make sure there's no cheating going on.
Is there a lot of that in Hilketa?
It's a professional sport, Agent Shane. Lots of players would give it a shot. I nodded to the empty creche.
What about Chapman?
Ortiz smiled and shook his head.
Nah, man. Not Dwayne.
Dwayne was straight edge as they come.
He motioned to an IV bag, unhooked now and dangling by the creche.
He only used league-approved supplements and IVs.
I walked over and looked at the IV solution bag. Labrum was also the brand name on it.
Was Chapman straight edge outside of his career? I asked.
What do you mean?
There are rumors that he was struggling with sobriety.
I motioned my head to a picture on the wall, a portrait of Marla Chapman.
Because of troubles at home.
Ortiz's face darkened a bit at this. I don't think I need to be talking about that, he said.
I held up a hand.
I'm not asking because I want to hear the latest gossip. I'm asking because I want to know why your friend died playing a game that shouldn't have killed him.
I'll let you talk to Marla about that, Ortiz said after a minute. But I'll tell you this, Agent Shane. I was with Dwayne most of the time he was awake, and all the time he was on the field, practicing or playing. No one would know better than me if he was doping, professionally or recreationally. I saw nothing like that. That wasn't his thing. So what was his thing? Like I said, I'll let Marla talk to you about that. Speaking of which, let me see if she's ready for you. I nodded, and Ortiz exited toward the kitchen, where Marla Chapman was talking to the league rep. I took the opportunity to quietly map the room for future examination. When I was done, I drew my attention to Marla Chapman's photo on the wall. She was young and attractive, in a mostly standard American cheerleader way. She was non-Hayden, which made it unusual for her to have married someone who was. Most of the time, when there was a mixed marriage of this sort, it was because one partner had contracted the disease at some point after the wedding. There was no bar to Haydens and non-Haydens hooking up, dating, or getting married. You're consenting adults, do what you want and be happy about it. But as with any time partners come from wildly different backgrounds, there are challenges. And if the rumors were true in this case, the challenges might have been too much for this particular marriage. Ortiz came back into the room. Marla will see you now, he said. I followed him into the kitchen, bumping into the league rep as I entered, and whom Ortiz escorted out of the house. He didn't seem entirely happy as he exited. But then, seated at the kitchen table, Marla Chapman didn't seem entirely happy with him. She looked over to me and the not-entirely-happy theme continued. "Mrs. Chapman, I'm Agent Chris Shane of the FBI's Hayden Affairs Division," I said. "I know who you are," Chapman said, and looked away. She held a small glass in her hand and fiddled with it, running a distracted finger around the rim. "Dwayne used to be a fan of yours." She motioned to an unoccupied chair at the table for me to sit in. I sat. "I'm very sorry about your husband's death." "Thank you." Chapman's voice was distant and guarded. I motioned back to where the league representative had gone. "I hope everything is okay with you and the league." Chapman glanced over to the door and smirked. "Oh, that prick," she said. "It was fine. He was just trying to bribe me." "How so?" "With my survivor benefits."
"Was he threatening to withhold them?"
"He can't. That much I know. But he's offering me extra to stay quiet. A settlement."
"The league can't keep you from talking to us," I said.
"Not you."
Chapman pointed in the direction of the front door.
"Them. The press camped out on my stoop."
"Why would he do that?"
"Because in public, the league would rather have Dwayne be a tragic figure than the cheating son of a bitch he was."
Chapman looked at me and, while obviously attractive, was haggard and drawn.
"Agent Shane, may I ask you a question?"
"Yes."
"A personal question."
"All right. I'll answer it if I can."
"When is it you can say a Hayden is a cheating son of a bitch?"
"I'm afraid I'm not following the question," I said. Chapman motioned to my threep.
"Well, look at you," she said. "You're walking around in a machine. If you're in a machine, and you're fooling around with someone else, are you really fooling around? Is it sex? Actual sex?"
She took a hand and gestured toward the room where her husband's crush resided.
"What I want to know is whether you think I should be allowed to be angry with my dead husband for screwing around on me, or if I should just be a grieving widow because sex doesn't count if you're in a machine for it."
I stared for a minute.
"Mrs. Chapman, Marla,
I don't think I'm qualified to judge your relationship with your husband."
"Sure you are. You're a Hayden. So was my husband. He was one since he was 3 years old. We met in college. I dated a guy in a threep. You wouldn't believe the crap I got for that, by the way. At Thanksgiving, the first year I dated Dwayne, I had a cousin ask me what it was like to date a walking vibrator."
"What did you say?" I asked.
"I didn't say anything. I punched the crap out of him, though."
I smiled inwardly at this.
"That seems fair," I said. "I always said I was in love with Dwayne for who he was, and the fact he was in a threep didn't matter."
Chapman fiddled with her glass some more.
"And then he joined the league, and the others started happening.
He would deny it, and there was no way to prove it, was there? She motioned to me.
You go off into the Agora, or comport yourself into a different threep if you want. You could say you were sleeping, or playing a game, or whatever, and none of us would ever know. At least, not until you fuck up and the landlord of the apartment you're renting for your adventures calls your business line to tell you that the neighbors are complaining about the noise, and your wife takes the call instead of you.
I'm sorry, I said.
So am I. But I'd still like you to answer the question.
I thought about it for a minute.
Then I said, You had certain expectations and understandings with your husband, Mrs. Chapman, about intimacy, about who you both spent your time with and how that time was spent. If your husband went against that, then he was unfaithful to you. Whether it counts as sex is immaterial to that.
So you would say he was a cheating son of a bitch?
Yes, I said. If he was doing that, he was a cheating son of a bitch.
Thank you, Chapman said and drained her glass.
Now, what are your questions for me?
Were you here today when your husband had his attack?
No. On game days, we have too many people in the house. Alton, his caregiver, you met him.
I nodded.
Whoever the league sends over to monitor Dwayne and Alton so they don't try to cheat or whatever. Dwayne's pals from the neighborhood who watch the game in the living room on our 100-inch screen. They get a kick out of being able to yell at Dwayne whenever he screws up a play. There are usually 5 or 6 of them. So no, I go out to shop or have lunch or see a movie with friends and come back when the game is done and everyone's cleared out.
So today
I went to see a movie with my friend Karen and I turned off my phone.
A pause here while Chapman fiddled with her empty glass and her eyes welled with tears that almost but did not spill over. She looked away, blinked, and then looked at me again.
And then, when I turned my phone back on, I learned that Dwayne was dead.
Before you left the house, did you say anything to your husband?
Just that I was going to see a movie.
So no arguments.
No. Well, Chapman amended, not today. We've argued before. A lot recently.
About that apartment.
No, not that. I'm sorry. I should have been more clear. Dwayne didn't know I knew about his extracurricular activities there. I just found out about it this last week. I didn't want him to know I knew. I was going to make it a surprise element of the divorce proceedings.
Mrs. Chapman, I said, maybe you should have a lawyer present right now.
Why? Chapman said.
I didn't kill him, Agent Shane. I wasn't even here when he died. And you can believe me when I say that I wanted him alive. I wanted to drag him through divorce hell. I don't need a lawyer.
I changed the subject. Did Dwayne have any addictions?
Aside from sex?
No. He never drank or did any drugs, even in college. He was aiming for the league even then. He said he didn't want to blunt his edge.
What about sharpening his edge, then?
You mean performance-enhancing drugs?
Chapman shook her head.
He never did any of that either. The league checked out everything Dwayne put into his body through a feeding tube or IV. They checked what came out, too. That crush of his monitored everything.
Alton had to ship the first bags of urine and feces after a game to the league for testing.
And not just Dwayne had to do this, it's every one of their players. Dwayne wouldn't risk it. He knew he wasn't a star.
It's the players who aren't the stars who might take the risk, I said. They know how quickly they can be out of the league.
Chapman shook her head again. You don't know Dwayne. He wouldn't. The league has a special nutritional supplement that they use. Every player got it, except for the stars who had their own supplement deals. But even they had to get their supplement formula approved. It's the only extra thing Dwayne ever put into his body.
What's in the supplement? I asked.
I don't know.
Vitamins, electrolytes?
Dwayne always said it was basically Hayden Gatorade.
Why are you asking?
Your husband died in a very public fashion. I'm sorry to put it this way, but we need to make absolutely sure it was accidental and not something else.
Chapman nodded and motioned toward the room her husband's body had been in.
Everything Dwayne put into his body is in there, she said. And if you talk to Alton again, he'll be able to give you a schedule of what got put in when.
Thank you, I will, I said.
I'm also interested in that apartment you spoke of. What about it? If it's something he kept from you, there might be things in there he didn't want you to see.
You mean aside from the people he was screwing?
Chapman asked.
Yes, aside from them, I said.
Chapman shrugged.
So go look.
We'd need to get a warrant, I said, from a judge here in town.
You don't need a warrant, Chapman said. I can give you permission to go inside.
If he kept its existence from you, it might be leased through a third party.
Chapman laughed at this. You would think that, wouldn't you?
But I told you, when I got the call from the landlord, it came on the business line. We have a pass-through corporation for endorsements and investments. Duane and I co-owned it.
He rented that apartment through the corporation.
I'm on the goddamned lease.
Chapter 5.
I thought you said your cab had a charge plate, I said to the new driver as I got into the cab.
I have a charger back here, he said.
It's a charge port for a phone, I said.
Right, a charger, he agreed.
I sighed and gave him an address, on Natrona Street in the Strawberry Mansion neighborhood. He punched it in and let the auto drive take over, and then stared into his phone. I glanced into my power level at the moment. I was down into single digits now.
Great.
I put up a map to see if there were any public charging stations between me and Duane Chapman's secret apartment, and found two, both in closed shops. Philadelphia was not impressing me. An interior window popped up with a New York number I didn't immediately recognize. I debated about answering it, but curiosity got the better of me.
I'm Larry Wilkerson from the New York Times, the person on the other end of the line said. I was hoping I could talk to you about the investigation of the deaths of Duane Chapman and Alex Kaufman.
How did you get this phone number? I asked.
Are the two deaths linked somehow? Wilkerson asked.
No comment, I said, and hung up and immediately switched my phone settings to passive, which would log calls and texts rather than take them, except from a specific list of contacts. I looked at the call log, which was suddenly filling up with texts and call requests, then closed it and pinged Van.
My number has apparently just been leaked to the press, I said to her.
No fucking kidding, she said. My phone has been a mess for the last 10 minutes.
You were lucky you called when you did. I was about to turn my phone off.
What happened?
Things are nuts over here, she said to me.
This has blown up into a national scandal. Apparently, our dear director has had to jump in with a quote.
Van was not fond of Gibbs Abelmeyer, the current director of the FBI.
It was no less stupid than anything else he said in the last year and a half. He said he's giving the Chapman investigation the highest priority.
Does that mean we're off the case? I asked.
Van snorted. It means we better not screw it up or we'll be looking for new jobs. For one of us, that will be a problem.
How are things on your end?
I caught Van up on my end. Plus, I'm almost out of power on this threep, and there's nowhere to charge.
Charge in your cab.
The cabs of Philadelphia are strangely hate and unfriendly, not to mention the rest of the town.
Well, you're going to the secret love nest of a Hayden.
I'm guessing there will be charging opportunities there.
I think that might be inappropriate.
More inappropriate than powering down in the middle of an investigation?
You have a point.
It's wireless induction. You can just say you didn't know you were standing on a plate.
I ignored this.
Do we have anything new on the investigations?
Kaufman's been cut down and is at the medical examiner's here. They're going to get him sometime tomorrow. I didn't get much of a sense of urgency from them about it. They think it's a straightforward suicide.
I mean, so do we.
Right, but they don't have the director of the FBI breathing down their necks because he just said on national TV he's making it a priority.
Fair point.
Damn right it is.
At least the Philly ME is more on the ball.
They already have someone examining Chapman's body and will have a preliminary report for us tomorrow.
So I'll need to come back.
I'll be there too. I want to take this report in person.
Why?
Because we have the FBI director breathing down our necks now.
I'm sensing a theme in your conversation.
I don't know why.
Van's sarcasm was unmistakable.
Also, I've had Chapman's game threep impounded. The Bay's tech director said there was nothing wrong with it, but I want to be sure. Does your flatmate know anything about threeps?
Tony? I said.
Sure.
He's been contract coding for at least a few of the big personal transport companies.
Add an examination of the threep to his to-do list.
What's he looking for?
For starters, anything that would amp up Chapman's pain sensitivity. That's gonna take a while. Threeps are complicated, and both their hardware and software are usually proprietary.
Are you saying we'll need a warrant to look at it? Van asked.
No, just that there's gonna be a lot of backward engineering involved.
We'll get in touch with the manufacturer and see if they want to play nice.
They're going to be worried about liability, I said.
Then we'll make them worry about impeding a federal investigation.
That's friendly, I joked.
FBI director, Van began, breathing down our necks, I finished.
Yeah, no, I get it.
I figured you would. Wrap up what you're doing and get back soon. I've got us scheduled bright and early in the imaging room. You, me, your flatmate Tony.
I checked my internal map.
We're almost there. I have to get the landlord to let me in. I'll look around and map it out and note anything useful or notable for collection tomorrow when we come back to town.
Seems simple enough, Van said. Don't jinx it, I said.
We turned onto Diamond, which connected to Natrona, and saw a building on fire.
Hey, my driver said. He pointed out the windshield to the burning townhouse. Isn't that your destination?
The building was definitely my destination, definitely on fire, and the crowd that had gathered was yelling at someone.
I am not fucking going back into that thing,
a man, short and lumpy, was saying.
I barely got out myself.
It's your building, one of the crowd said.
You're the landlord.
I'm not the landlord, I'm the manager.
So you're going to let her die? The fire department is coming. They're not going to get here on time,
someone else yelled.
They're on York Avenue, for Christ's sakes, the manager said.
They closed that station down 2 years ago, you asshole.
I'm not going in.
I'll go in, I said loudly. Everyone turned to look at me. I'm an FBI agent, I said. The manager pointed at me.
Let the Fed go in.
Who's still in there, I asked.
The old lady on the third floor, a kid said to me.
I turned to the manager, who nodded.
Shanika Miller, he said. Everybody else is out but her.
Everyone?
Yeah, the manager said. I'm ground floor, the Waverleys are on first.
He pointed to a couple sobbing at the curb, a small curly dog licking one of their faces in an attempt to comfort its owner.
And Shanika's on third.
What about the second floor?
That guy's dead, someone in the crowd said. Not from the fire,
the manager yelled back. I held out my hand. Keys. The manager handed over a key ring with several keys on it, color-coded.
Third floor is the red keys.
How long has the fire been going?
Like 5 minutes, the manager said. Out of fucking nowhere.
I looked at the building. The entryway doors were blown out with glass everywhere. Smoke poured out the door and out of the windows.
This is a bad idea, I said to myself, and jumped through the shattered doors.
I turned off my senses of smell and pain, but could still feel the heat as I climbed the stairs. The first floor apartment was wide open and in flames. The second floor apartment, Chapman's, had its door closed. If Shanika Miller's apartment had its door closed, I had a decision to make. Opening it could create a column of oxygen rushing through the stairwell, feeding the fire. In a rush to save Miller, I might end up killing her instead. The problem was moot when I reached the third floor. Miller was on the landing, unconscious, her door ajar behind her. I'd guessed she had tried to make it down the stairs and was overcome by smoke before she'd even gotten to the first stair. Either that or had a heart attack or something else equally grim. Well, now was not the time to speculate. The fire was still gathering strength. I bent down, picked Miller up in a fireman's carry, and headed down the stairs as quickly as possible, individual steps groaning under the weight. I had to open the ground floor doors this time to get through with her on my back. Crowd members rushed up and relieved me of Miller, carrying her away to a safe distance from the burning building. I turned my sense of smell back on and was hit by a wave of scorched plastic and hot metal scent. I figured the Philly FBI branch was not going to be happy with what I did to their threep. Someone touched me on the arm. It was a kid who solemnly pointed to the windows of the second floor of the building. There was something moving there. I looked closer.
Chapman had a goddamn cat? I said out loud to no one in particular.
Are you gonna go get it?
The kid asked.
Oh, come on, I thought, but did not say out loud, and turned to the nearest adult.
How long until the fire department gets here? I asked.
This is Strawberry Mansion, she said to me. By the time they get here, this building's gonna be gone.
Well, I needed to get in there anyway, I thought.
and then found the manager in the crowd.
"What color key for the second floor?" I asked.
"Green," he said.
"You're going back in there?"
"There's a cat," I said.
"I wouldn't," he warned.
"Yeah, but you're an asshole," someone said from the crowd. The manager scowled and shut up. The second trip up the stairs was hotter and more precarious and smoke-filled than the first. I fished the green keys into the door lock, unlatched the door, and prepped myself to open and close it as quickly as possible to keep the burst of oxygen from adding another layer of ignition to the flames. Cracked the door, and then saw a flash at my feet as the cat shot out of the apartment and zoomed down the stairs. I slammed the door shut and raced back to the stairwell in time to see the cat rocketing out of the shattered front doors of the building. I looked dumbly to where the cat had exited, and then remembered where I was. I went back to the apartment door and quickly let myself in. The apartment was filled with smoke and threeps, and the threeps on display in the front room made it clear what they were meant for. One of them was anatomically male, a second anatomically female, and then there were two threeps that were neither, but had an area on their lower abdomen that featured ridges and grooves. Three grooves separated by two arcing ridges. That was new to me. I photographed them as I mapped through the apartment as quickly as I could, seeing that it was, after all, on fire. The plan was to map now, examine closely later, which was a good thing when I got to the bedroom, which was filled with toys, and the spare room, which was a dungeon, and the kitchen, which was less of a kitchen and more of an erotic art gallery. I wasn't judging, it's just that there was a lot to take in. But I was also aware that on the surface, and through the smoke, there wasn't much here that was going to be useful. Chapman clearly had his kinks, but kinks were probably unrelated to his death. This visit had been dramatic, but only really that. "But you don't really believe that," some part of my brain said. And I didn't. Coincidence does happen, but Chapman dying and a Hoketa League executive killing himself and Chapman's secret love nest burning down all within a span of 8 hours was a little much to take. "I'm missing something," I said out loud and decided to take another swing mapping through the apartment on the way out. I looked up to start mapping. One of the threeps from the front room was standing in the hall, looking at me through the smoke. "What the hell?" I thought, stepped forward, and then was deeply confused as the floor gave way from underneath me. Gravity dropped me into the first floor apartment of the Waverleys, which was substantially more on fire than Chapman's had been. I rolled over and looked up through what remained of the Waverleys' ceiling and Chapman's floor to see the threep looking down at me. Then it disappeared. My threep informed me I was on fire. "Well, there's a sign," I thought. I picked myself up to get out just in time for my threep's internal systems to warn me that I had another 30 seconds of power available to me. "Fuck," I said, and sprinted toward the front windows. The plan was to jump through them and get the threep clear of the fire and collapsing building. It was an excellent plan, marred somewhat by the fact that the threep's power management system had egregiously overestimated the power left in the threep. I made it as far as the Waverley's front room, tastefully appointed in modern-era furniture and fire, before the threep collapsed. The last thing I saw through the threep was the Eames lounge chair the threep had collided with, which was on fire, and which was now spreading the fire to the threep. Then I was kicked out of the threep entirely, left to float in my liminal space, the private area all Haydens had in the Agora, our online network. I hovered in my liminal space for a couple of minutes. Then I sighed inwardly and pulled up a window to Avis, the rental service I had an account with.
"Welcome to Avis," the rental bot in the window said.
I wouldn't get a human until and unless my request got complicated.
"How may I help you?"
"I need to rent a threep," I said, "and a car, both in Philadelphia, and as close to the Strawberry Mansion neighborhood as you can get." Chapter 6.
"You look tired," Van said to me the next morning as I wandered into the FBI's basement imaging room. She, along with Tony Wilton and Ramon Diaz, the imaging lab technician, were waiting for me.
"I'm in a friggin' robot body," I said. "How do I look tired?"
"You're slumping."
"I'm not slumping," I straightened up.
"Uh-huh," Van went back to her coffee. Chris didn't come back to the house until 2 a.m., Tony said.
You're telling on me?
I said to Tony, incredulously.
I'm giving context.
You were up then, too, I protested.
He's not slumping, Van pointed at Tony's threep. In Chris's defense, I was not the one leaping into burning buildings, rescuing little old ladies and cats from flames, Tony said. And then having to file police and fire reports because your borrowed threep burned up in the fire, I said. Which reminds me that when we go to Philadelphia later, we have an invitation from the director there to pop into her office and explain why you let a $50,000 threep burn down to the metal, Van said to me.
You can tell her that if they had the fucking induction plate plugged in, this wouldn't be a problem.
No, you get to tell her. This should be fun.
Guys, we should get started, Diaz said. The room's booked in an hour and you have lots you want to get through.
Van nodded and turned to Diaz. Bring up the hotel room.
Diaz fired up the imaging equipment, and out of the projectors came what I had mapped the day before. Alex Kaufman's hotel room, translucent and half-sized, including the bathroom, which featured Kaufman's body hanging from the shower head.
Whoa, Jesus, Tony said. His hand went up in front of his face.
Sorry, I said.
I think I should get extra for having to see that.
Quiet, Van said.
You were there after our people and Metro Police arrived, I said to Van. How did it go?
Well, Metro Police didn't fuck it up, which was a miracle. Van pointed to Kaufman's virtual corpse.
Our people, Metro Police, and the ME's people all agree it looked like a suicide. No obvious marks on his body that suggest a struggle or fight with a third party. No indication in the room of anything like that either. We have to wait for an official ruling, obviously. We got into the room a little more than 10 minutes after we had texted, and he was dead when we got to him. So basically, he would have sent me a text and, in the next minute or so, taken his belt and strung himself up, I said.
You think we pushed him over the edge?
Maybe. I pointed to Kaufman's phone on the toilet lid.
But I think he might have already been in process and picked up the phone when I texted.
He interrupted killing himself to answer a text, Van said skeptically. Not to mention bringing his phone with him into the bathroom when he killed himself.
I pointed to the pocket I knew Van kept her phone in.
You take your phone with you everywhere.
I looked at Ramon. I bet you do too.
I didn't bring Tony in on this one because he had a threep. Our phones were built in.
I definitely take my phone with me when I'm in the bathroom, Ramon confirmed.
Yeah, but you're going to the bathroom to take a crap, not kill yourself, Van said to Ramon.
He shrugged.
My point is that it's an automatic behavior, I said. He probably didn't even think about it.
So Kaufman freaks out about the feed, has it pulled, goes back to the hotel, undresses, takes his belt and his phone into the bathroom, wraps the belt around the shower head pipe and his own neck, responds to a text, tells us to come up in 15 minutes, then kills himself.
Right.
Sounds complicated, Van said.
Does it matter? I asked.
Whether he was planning to kill himself before we called or after?
We're trying to figure out why he might have killed himself, so yes.
Also, there's this. Van pointed to the door with its extended bolt. He wanted to make it easy for someone to get into his room. Was that meant for us or for someone else? And if someone else, who and why?
You interviewed the NAHL people, I said. What did they have to say about it?
They were all shocked, Van said. As in actually shocked, not just saying they were shocked. Apparently Kaufman was on the bottom of anyone's list of people to hang themselves in a hotel bathroom. She pointed to Kaufman's image. No history of depression, generally enthusiastic about life, all that. Apparently a go-getter.
What does that mean?
I think it means he was an asshole, just an enthusiastic one who did his job and got things done.
Was he married or in a relationship? I asked.
If something was going wrong there, it might have contributed to his hanging himself.
Van shook her head.
No. Has parents and a sister. The league notified them. I'll touch base with them today or tomorrow.
Did anyone check his phone? Tony asked.
If he was wanting to be in touch with his family or someone else, he might have called or texted before...
Tony waved his hand in the direction of the apparent suicide scene.
The phone was locked, Van said.
Tony glanced over at the phone. I can think of several ways to get into that sort of phone.
I think with two different law enforcement agencies on the scene, no one wanted to be the one to attempt an unconstitutional search. Point.